ברשותכם, it's still Tish B'Av. Still Tish B'Av, we're still here. ברשותכם, are we keeping Rabbeinu Tam tonight? No? Somebody checked the Zmanim website? Mr. Kaczynski? Bashus of Mr. Kaczynski, Zatzal. And all of those who are most in nefesh today for the Jewish people. Today was a phenomenal day. It was a beautiful thing that happened here. It was real mysterious nefesh and real Avas Yisrael in action. You should feel very proud. You know, they say you're either part of the problem or part of the solution. So you could say that today, Befrat, but this summer, Bechlal, and always, you're part of the solution in a real way. In 1935, Shlomo Heyman, who was Rosh Hashiva in Vilna, a phenomenal Gaon, Talmud of Rav Baruch Ber, he was on staff with Rav Elchanan Wasserman. If there was a teacher's room, if there was a coffee room there, then they would have been like on the same insurance plan. They would have been together in the teacher's room. They're on staff together as a contemporary. Shlomo Heyman in 1935 got the call from the bullpen, from Reb Shraga Feivel Mendelevich, Tzatzal, the great builder of Torah in America, about whom both the Kloisenberger Rebbe and the Satmar Rebbe are cousins, but saw things slightly differently. Both agreed that without Reb Shraga Feivel, there wouldn't be Torah here in this country. Reb Shraga Feivel found the Torah Vadas, and the yeshiva was in distress. There was a change in leadership, and they needed a ringer. So he called in Reb Shlomo Heyman, a Gaon from Vilna, to come in to assume the position as a Rosh Yeshiva. He was a clear thinker, a deep thinker. There's a couple of WhatsApps going around. I guess depending on which ecosystem of WhatsApp groups you're in. But I got it from like three different places of Rav Shlomo Karlbach, Chusay Agen Aleinu, talking about his Rebbe, Rav Shlomo Heyman, who he learned with in Torah Vadas. He's just talking about what it was like to learn with him. Just like hearing, like he said, if you could hear Rav Shlomo Heyman just say like 2 + 2 = 4, you would never see the world the same way again. It's the way that he was able to analyze things and give it such clarity. But one of the mahalachim, one of the ways that Reb Shlomo Heyman would give over Torah, is that when they were deep in the sugya, when they were heavy in the learning, and came upon something in the learning, something in the sugya which was challenging, some question, some question or some type of a hakira or something in the sugya that was unresolved or that was left hanging, Shlomo would present it to the shir, present it to the yeshiva, people would present answers, and Shlomo would just kind of leave it there. And often to the disappointment of like impatient bachrim, bnei Torah, who were learning and someone asked a good question and wanted to hear the answer, Shlomo Heyman wouldn't answer. And he would end shir on that note. And he would say that because, listen, you have such a good kasha, it's such a good question, why should I ruin it with an answer that's not as good? Now, I don't want to ruin anything. I want to ruin any questions. So I don't want to presume to know the answer to any questions. But maybe together we could maybe just kind of go over some of these questions. Because Tisha B'Av is a day of questions. By Reisman says that the entire Sefer Kinos is a book of questions. They're questions that express the just infinite magnitude, the incomprehensibility of Jewish suffering throughout history. And it's question after question. Eicha, 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 how could it be? How could it be? How could it be? And we apply these questions to all different parts of history, from the times of the Churban, to the Crusades, the Inquisition, the pogroms, and in contemporary modern history. But the refrain over and over again after everyone in the Kinos and throughout the Megillah today is Eicha, Eicha, Eicha. How could it be? How could it be? How could it be? How could you have abandoned the Beis HaMikdash? How could you have done this to us? How could you have let this happen to us? How could you be deaf to the cries of the women and children? How could it be that this is our destiny? Now, it's almost like a rhetorical question. We just frame that it's rhetorical. We're not waiting. It's like we're not sitting there waiting for an answer. We continue with the next refrain. We ask the question and then we continue asking, and then we talk a little more and then we continue asking again. Almost as if we've been resigned to not getting an answer for that question. Because deep down inside, I say this at the outset, we're not really looking for an answer. Dr. Chaim Ginot is a real gadol in understanding relationships between parents and children, between siblings and people. Just a phenomenal, insightful Yiddish cup. And one of the big yisodos is that when a child comes before their parent and expresses something, anger, frustration, sadness, embarrassment, hurt, or whatever, they don't want that feeling to be judged. Not looking for a solution, even. Maybe down the road. But first things first, they're looking to be heard. Looking to be validated. Looking to know that they're not alone. That we're not alone. That our questions and our feelings are validated. So over and over and over again in Kinos, in our lamentations, we're asking, we just want to know, Ribono Shalom, do you hear us? Are you here with us? And throughout the day, not looking to understand God's ways, even. We kind of come into this knowing and assuming that we're not going to understand at the end, and yet over and over and over again, we're asking kashas and questions and kashas and questions. That's really how Torah is designed. Torah is the ultimate source of clarity, the ultimate expression of divine clarity in the world. If we want to know what to do, from the time we wake up in the morning, the time we go to sleep at night, and then even while we're sleeping, from the time that we're born, from the time that we die, and even before we're born, and even after we die. So halacha is our guide. Like we talked about in the beginning of the summer, we might not know a lot of things. Might be a lot of uncertainty in the world. The entire world is a world of uncertainty. But Torah is our guide, and halacha defines and interprets the will of Hashem in our lives. The ultimate source of clarity and truth, revelation at Har Sinai, revealing the Torah, granting us this gift of Moshe Emes v'Torah, so Emes, of real truth, was revealed within uncertainty, within a fog. Vayamar ha'amir rachok. We had to stand back. It's of our physical stance at Har Sinai is preparing us to understand what it means to be in this covenant with Hashem. Is that as much as we yearn for dveikus, closeness, and yichud with Hashem, there's an element in that relationship of vayamod merachok. And Moshe nigash al ha'arafel. Moshe went into the fog. Because there, shesham elokim. Our relationship with Yiddishkeit, with Torah, with this divine system, from that moment at Har Sinai, everything takes place in the context of a fog, of uncertainty. The irony is, Nasev and Nishma, and the Moshe Emes v'Toraso Emes, and the Dveikus Bashem and the Yichud Bashem, is sometimes most powerfully and acutely expressed in its most tangible and real way, our emunah could feel so strong and clear in those moments where yichud is revealed not with clarity and simcha, but revealed in pain. Revealed in questions and not knowing. Generations of parents and machanchim, parents of Gedolei Yisrael, lahavdil, parents of creative thinkers, of big thinkers. Einstein said this about his parents, Jonas Salk said about his parents, and Gedolei Yisrael have told over that this is like one of the ways that they were mechunach, that they were trained and educated, is that we're rewarded for good questions, not necessarily for giving a good answer. And you give a good answer, okay, good, you knew the information, you had the answer, that's good, that's very good. But you know what's really good? What's really creative? What really opens up the wellsprings of thinking, of processing, of inner working? That's questioning, not answering. Questions are beginnings. Answers end it. Answers complete the circuit. But questions open it up. They open us up. When we're open, we're vulnerable. When we're open, we could be hurt. When we're open, we could be anxious. We could be stressed out. Because there's not clarity and finality. But consider that the headquarters of Jewish transmission, the night on the calendar, which is most central to the transmission of Jewish values, of giving over, on Pesach night, our story, our values, who we are, Bnei Bechor Yisrael, of giving it over on Pesach, Ma Nishtana Alayla Hazeh, the whole thing starts with a question, and we answer the question with a question. It's the question of the four sons with their questions, and the whole night is Shachar V'Tariyah, questions and questions and discussions and answers and questions about Tzipri Yetzias Mitzrayim. In a roundabout way, Shlomo once said, because when someone asks a question, it opens up and begins a conversation. But when we provide an answer to that question, so it ends, it ends the conversation. And usually when someone's asking a question, it's not just looking for information. Not just looking for the data. Not just looking for the details. Looking for some type of connection. Or something that would to experience together. Someone said, no, instead of answering a question directly with an answer, as a parent, as a friend, as someone in a relationship, maybe it's deeper to listen to the question, to hear it and say, you know, I also have that question. Maybe we could ask it together and go together to the Arafel and find Ha'elokim, the name of God which represents Midas Hadin, in that fog, in that uncertainty together. Pesach night is questions and questions and questions. It's a night of questions. So that the children shall ask. We do all sorts of stuff. We have a Seder plate there. On the Seder plate we have all sorts of stuff. One of the things on that Seder plate we also have, a hard-boiled egg. So that the children shall ask. Pesach falls out the same night as Tisha B'Av every year. Simin L'davar, that the egg of the Su'udah Mafsekes of Tisha B'Av already was there on our Pesach Seder. To remind us in our highest moments that there's still an Amma in our homes that's unpainted, and in our most difficult moments sitting on the floor to remember that we're still the sons and daughters of kings. The Pesach night is a night of asking questions because slaves aren't able to ask questions. They receive orders. They get commandments, they get instructions, and they have to do it. Or else. But someone who's free, a free person, can ask questions. Why? What's the reason? How come? Do I have to? Really? For sure? Gangsters don't ask questions. That Hannibal Buress points out that gangsters don't ask questions. But that's actually not true, because gangsters do ask questions. Not for now. It's an incorrect assertion that gangsters don't ask questions. You want to die? What? Jews ask questions. That's what we do. It's part of who we are. It's part of built into how we live our lives. We ask questions. Free people ask questions. And the Yidden ask questions. We reward. A good cheder Rebbe, a good teacher, parent who knows what's up, rewards for a good question, not just for an answer. It's codified in Torah that that's the way it is. The mitzvah of Shemitah, Hashem promises us, tells us like this, work for six years, Sheishanim Tizra, work for 6 years, plant the fields. Uvashvi'is, in the seventh year, what happens in the seventh year? Seventh year, everybody, we go free. It's Shemitah. The land is free. And then the Jubilee, all the slaves are let free. But in the seventh year, Hashem says, you'll be provided for. You'll be provided for in the seventh year, and you'll be provided for in the eighth year, and in the ninth year. Hashem will provide, Hashem will take care of us. It's a real test of emunah in Eretz Israel to leave one's land in the seventh year for Shemitah. Shvius. It's one of the privileges, and it's one of the opportunities, and it's one of the challenges of living in Eretz HaKodesh. Seder Zeraim is called Seder HaEmunah. And at the core of Seder Zeraim, at the core of the agricultural life in Eretz Israel, is leaving one's field fallow, just letting it go. Stepping back, letting it go, and counting on Hashem's promise that will be provided for. V'chitomru. V'chisomru manocha b'shana shviyis. And when you will say, when you will ask, what are we going to eat in the seventh year? If we're not allowed to plant and gather our crops, so what are we supposed to eat in the seventh year? So Torah says, Hashem says, I'm going to double down in the sixth year. I'm going to send my blessing there in the sixth year. And you're going to have like exponentially more wheat, more crops, more fruits, and that 60 year to last all those years. And then when you sow in the eighth year, and you'll eat from the grain, yashan, it'll be the tfuah yashan, you'll be eating from in the eighth year when you're planting, you'll be eating from the old grain, ad ashana tishis, until the ninth year, ad bo tfuasa tochlu yashan. When you sow in the eighth year, you'll still be eating the old grain from that crop, and you'll be eating the old until the ninth year, until the crops come in. It's like a whole roundabout way that the Ribbono Shel Olam is answering this very simple concern and question, doubt, maybe, that the Jews have. And when Hashem says, leave your field fallow, and we look in the Ribbono Shel Olam and say, but like, what are we going to do? How's that going to work? The chisomru manochal bashana hashvius. Not if it happens that maybe some among you will ask. Kadosh Baruch Hu predicts and lays out that it's human condition to ask that question. We have a mitzvah. We have a promise. We have divine instruction. And we have faith. And the Ribbono Shel Olam codifies in Torah that this is going to be a question, a doubt. That you're going to ask, what are we going to do? How is this going to work? Says Reb Leibel Eiger in Taras Emes, the Talmud of the Choza, a Kotzker, and became a Rebbe after the Patira of the Ishbitzer. Says Reb Leibel Eiger, on this Pasuk of Chisomru, Manochal, why does Hashem put it in there? Meaning it's like, lo yafeh. It shows a weakness in emunah. Why put that in the Torah? I mean, it could have edited, maybe in the first draft. But the second draft, I mean, maybe the editor could have taken a look at it and cut that out. Say, we don't need to like give everybody chalisha sadas. You don't need to like make the Jewish people look bad, that they're not going to have faith, they're not going to be all in. It should have been enough for Hashem to say, Smoch alai, I'm going to give extra in the sixth year. Smoch alai. Special for you, in the sixth year you'll have more. Why do we have to have this whole construct of formulating a question within the Torah text? Melo yal al adas l'sholo davar. L'chora, we would think, why would we have to ask a question if Hashem promised? If Hashem says it's going to be, then let it be. Why does there have to be a question in Torah? Amnam yesh lomar ki divrei ha-sheila hazos yora al-mavakesh emuna. This question codifies. The fact that it's in the Torah expresses that when someone asks a question on a divine promise, that person is not a kofer. They're not an apikores. When we have a doubt, when we have a question on Hashem, on a promise that Hashem made, that's not called kfira. That's not called apikorsus. That question is called being mavakish emuna. It means asking, I'm yearning for emuna. So Ribono Shel Olam, what are we going to eat? Bo'ot Shalom is pashta emuna belibo. I'm still not there completely. This is not talking about a shvach year, shvach ador in 2020. Shvach ador, we went through COVID, it's so hard for us. We have to listen to music during the 9 days. We're shvach ador, we can't help ourselves. What are we supposed to do? Nebuch, we have to have inspiration. We have to watch in the bathroom. We have to be flipping through, watching inspirational things on the phone. This is talking about that this is Torah. This is Torah, Sefer Vayikra. Dordea. They saw open miracles. And they had questions. And the Ribbono Shel Olam honors those questions and gives kavod to those questions. Because Hashem knows that that question comes from a place of a yearning for closeness. Bo'ot Shel Olam is pashta emuna b'libo liroz b'chush hashkachaso yisbarach b'chol prat. Because a person, still not, we're not divine, we're people. And it hasn't reached every single corner of ourselves. But deep inside, we're yearning to reach that full emuna. For us to know that asking those questions, not even somebody who has doubts, even somebody who's struggling with emuna, they're also precious to Hashem. That's also good to say. That's sweet and that's nice. But this is not what Rebbe Leibel Eger. I don't believe that that's the intention. I believe the intention of Rebbe Leibel Eger is to tell us, no, that asking a question is what makes us chaviv tashem. What is a parent interested in, or a teacher, or somebody who's giving over something? I want to know. I want to know you're with me. I want to know that you're interested, that you're engaged. You have to agree. Tell me that you're paying attention, that what I'm saying is meaningful to you, and you're not sure about it. Ask. Ein abayishan lomeid. It's a sign of someone who's mevake shemuna to ask those questions. In the new phenomenal textbook of how to be a decent human being and a caring person and a loving person that Suli Besser just put out in Rabbi David Schrenk's Atzal, he mentions in there that Rabbi David Schrenk loved a vart from the Rebbe Zusha. Rebbe Zusha on this pasuk of Manochal b'shnasa ashvius, Rebbe Zusha from Annapoli, he would say on this pasuk, like the same thing, like why Kodesh Baruch Hu could have left it out, and then like the answer is that like, you know, that you'll eat the old grain from the sixth year and the eighth year and then the ninth year. It's like a roundabout kind of an answer, but it's a kinderish question. It's a childish question. He offered like his own. Rabbi Trank said this example. Imagine that a kid dreams to go to summer camp, and all he wants is to go to summer camp. And the parents finally get it together, and they make it happen. They save and they save and they figure it out, and they come to the kid and they say, "You know, you're able to go to camp this summer. We're able to make it happen for you." Kid's so overwhelmed with simcha that he's able to go to camp, and he starts to cry. See, the parents say, "What's the matter? What's wrong?" He said, "Yeah, I mean, but what am I going to eat there? What am I going to have for lunch over there in camp? Imagine. No, you're going to camp. We're sending you to camp. HaKadosh Baruch Hu says to Klal Yisrael, I'm giving you Eretz Yisrael. I'm giving you Eretz Yisrael. I'm delivering you to the promised land together. V'chitomer ma'anocha, what are we going to eat there for lunch in the sixth year? Like in the seventh year?" And David says, it's like almost like a funny question. It's like a kinderish question. And yet, HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives that question kavod. He puts it into the Torah. To know that every single question that a Jew has is important. And you have to give it a proper answer. If Hashem gives it a proper answer, then we have to know that we have to give a proper answer. Rilke was a Bohemian Austrian poet and novelist. And I thank my mother for this one. Letters to a Young Poet. This is the way that Rilke describes his yearning. I beg of you, as well as I can, to have patience toward all that is unsolved in your heart, and to try to love the questions themselves, like locked rooms and like books that are now written in a very foreign tongue. Don't seek the answers which can't be given to you, because you would not be able to live with them. The point is to live everything. V'chai b'hem, that's the point. Live the questions now. Then gradually, without noticing it, we'll live our way into the answer. Being able to be okay with the Ribbono Shel Olam saying, stand back over here. I'm going to give you the Torah. Smoch alai that this Torah is going to be an instruction book for your life. This Torah is an Eitz Chaim. This Torah came Chayenu v'Orech Yameinu. But stand back. And Moshe, come to the Arafel. It means to live with questions. And not always to search out the answer. But to understand that those questions themselves are emuna. And that we don't really want the answer. But we want to be mevakshe emuna. Kadosh Baruch Hu Zohar Kadosh explains, it says very simply, Ein Sof. Less machshava tfisaba. I mean, we can't wrap our heads around the Ribbono Shel Olam by definition. That's the way HaKadosh Baruch Hu created us. I don't want to believe in a God that I could understand. Said Rabbi Nachman or the Kotzker or Mother Teresa. I don't know whoever said it, Lavdil. Whatever the meme is. The day you were born is the day that God decided the world, whatever. We're not able to believe in a God that we can understand. That's the way that it works. That's how Hashem built it. I mean, that's the mechanism. Less machshava tfisaba means that necessarily we are not able to understand. Necessarily not knowing is the ideal state for mevakesh emuna. We're not able to be mevakesh emuna when we have the answer. The conversation is done. But we're asking the question, and the question is being validated. Manochal b'shnas ha-shviyas. Elie Wiesel's memoir, Open Heart, is a really unbelievable book. It's an important book. It's not a book that's read in the restroom. It's not. Is it a sefer? It's a sefer. Describes that he had a conversation with a great journalist who was a good friend of his, who asked him, Ba'arba Inayim, they had like a real open, the book is called Open Heart, and it really is. And this journalist friend of his asked him in an interview, said, when you stand before God, he knew that he was a Ma'amin, a person who believed, he said, you know, when you stand before God, what are you going to ask him? Like, what are you going to, like, when you get there? So Elie Wiesel said, and he confessed, he said, I've certainly rebelled against God, but I've never repudiated God. I mean, I've rebelled against the Ribbono Shel Olam. I've never denied the Ribbono Shel Olam. I've never repudiated the Ribbono Shel Olam. He said that he answered this friend in his interview with one word. Eicha. How? Why? Every moment of Jewish suffering throughout all of history, every drop of Jewish blood is a question. It's a question. Some of these questions maybe are more difficult to answer than others. And some of these questions are more difficult to even ask. But if not now, when? If if not in the final moments of Tisha B'Av, when? Rabbi Avram Krieger is a real Baal Avoda. Did anybody have the privilege of going to, of ever meeting Rabbi Krieger? I was in Shalvin, maybe? Wait, Rabbi Krieger? Maybe he has a place in the north called Shem Olam. A phenomenal place. Haven't been. It's a phenomenal Holocaust center and resource center. And he's a Talmud Chacham. Actually, I've met him over the years many times through, you know, trips to Poland and other opportunities. And once we were in Netanya, and I met him outside the tzion of the Kloisenberger Rebbe. He was davening. Anyways, he once he organized a conference, a Holocaust conference, for survivors and research in Kfar HaRoeh at Shem Olam. And said he had the schus of hosting Elie Wiesel, Zechus Yogen Aleinu, in Kfar HaRoeh. And he stayed over at Rabbi Krieger's house, who was organizing the conference. Anyways, you know, how is when you have sleepover company? Like, you know, you kind of give them their space, and you kind of like, they know where the bathroom is, and they know where, like, you let show them where the coffee is and the snacks are, or whatever, you know. But he didn't know exactly what to do protocol in terms of the morning. Like, does he like? Do I knock? Like, do you want to knock for Shacharis? Should I tell you what time davening is in the morning? Like, he didn't know what to do. Meaning, he read the book Night. Imagine here, everyone's read the book Night. Do people read books anymore? When that scene in God, you know, where is God? And Elie Wiesel says, there at the gallows. Meaning, like, we read the book. So he didn't know what to say. Like, do I tell him about davening? Do I hack? Do I ask him if he wants to? He decided he's going to tell him. He just, like, informs. You know? He, like, doesn't invite him to the bris, just informs him. He says, I'm going to Shacharis at 6 o'clock in the morning. Just let him know. I'm going to Shacharis at 6 o'clock in the morning. Is there a time that you would like specifically to get up, like, for me to set an alarm? And Elie Wiesel said to him, I'm so glad you told me. You know, I forgot my tefillin. I left my tefillin in the apartment. You know, maybe when you come back from shul, if you could just make sure to bring yours, I can lay tefillin before we go to the conference at home before I go. Rabbi Krieger couldn't hold himself back, and he said, "Tefillin? I'm saying, is that something? Is that like that's you put on? That's what you do? Like, you lay tefillin every day?" And Elie Wiesel looked at him and said, "I lay tefillin every single day, and I daven every single day. A day doesn't go by that I don't lay tefillin, put pe'er tachas efer, and lay my tefillin and daven from a siddur. It's the same siddur that you have, the same tefillin you have, and it's the same shmona esrei that you have. Maybe my davening is just a little bit different. Because when I begin the Amidah, and I say, Baruch Ata Hashem, I ask Elokeinu, Ve'elokei Avoseinu, is this my God? The God that I met in Auschwitz, is this Elokei Avoseinu? Are you indeed Elokei Avram? Are you indeed Elokei Yitzchak, the God of Yitzchak, who spared him at the altar? Elokei Yaakov? It's the same siddur and the same tefillin. Jews ask questions. A Yid who is a Mavakesh Amunah asks questions. And those questions can be rebellious. But those questions are never repudiation. It's never repudiation. The question itself is an expression of Amunah. It's a protest. It could be painful. Sometimes we get answers. There are times that we get answers from Hashem, and sometimes those answers hurt. October of 1994, in 12th grade. I was a senior at Frisch. I was a young man, a young soldier from Yerushalayim, from Ramot, where Davida lives, who was kidnapped by Hamas terrorists. He was tramping home from his army base, and the terrorists pulled over. They were wearing yarmulkes, chumash on the dashboard. They're playing music, nigunim, and waved him in. Come on in, where are you heading? We'll take you. Nachshon Waxman was the third of seven sons. He was born Shvi Shel Pesach. He was named for the hero of Shvi Shel Pesach, Nachshon Ben Aminadav, the hero of Emuna, who took that leap. His mother, Esther Waxman, you might recognize that name if anybody volunteered in Shalva. Esther Waxman is one of the original founding supporters of Shalva, dedicated a room there, and she's around there sometimes. Esther Waxman was born in a DP camp in Germany. She made Aliyah. Her parents, they went right after the war. After she was born in the DP camp, they moved to New York. And after the Six-Day War, she said that's it. She heard the Kol Dodi Dofek and she picked up and moved to Eretz Israel. There was a videotape. I'm looking around the room. I'm realizing that most people probably don't even know what I'm talking about. There's a videotape. Nachshon was bound hand and foot. And there was a terrorist with a keffiyeh. His face was covered behind him. He was holding up his Tudat Zehud, he was holding up his identification, his ID card. And the terrorist recited his name and home address and his ID number. They had him at gunpoint. And he said, I was kidnapped and they're demanding the release of Ahmed Yassin Yimach Shemo and hundreds of other terrorists. And you have to release them by Leil Shabbos, by Friday night, or I'll be executed. Imagine the video went blank. I mean, the whole world. I mean, there wasn't a Jew alive in the world who wasn't tapped in. Maybe you remember the three boys, and that's more current for you. That was more matsui in your memory, in recent memory. But this was full on panic mode for the Jewish people. Esther Waxman said that she received 30,000 letters to her house. People writing letters, just sharing their support and telling them how much they're thinking of them and connecting of them. I remember in the Isaac Levins, in Frisch, in the main old building, in the main shul. That shul where Sarah Duker davened, where Lisa Flato davened. This the shul where the shul is a shul where people who were died al Kiddush Hashem davened. I remember I was in 12th grade. I was one of the people who was like organizing the thing. The entire school, all the teachers, that Friday morning. And it was Friday morning, and 7 hours later in Eretz Israel, everybody was davening. Everyone was davening. Tens of thousands of women lit Shabbos candles early. It was like a thing. An extra light for Nachshon. And the images from the Kotel, you could see it on there. There are 100,000 Jews at the Kotel. 100,000 Jews at the Kotel. The yeshivas of Yerushalayim, Mir, they piled out. Jews with yarmulkes, without soldiers. It was this unbelievable scene. It was literally the only thing happening in Klal Yisrael. I remember hearing that there were reporters outside of the home, you know, camped out. Hundreds and hundreds of reporters from all over the world camped out in front of the Waxman's home, right in Ramot. And that when Shabbos came in, they lit candles, and they didn't know that was it. After Hadlakas Neros, it was when the deadline was. And these reporters couldn't understand. They heard Zmira Shabbos coming from their house. Esther Waxman, Yehuda Waxman, was sitting at the table with their children. there's six other children singing Shabbos mirrors with equanimity, with emunah. They couldn't understand how a family whose their existence, their son's life hung in the balance, and the entire world is watching. He was an American citizen. Clinton was involved. Arafat Yimach Shemo was involved. They're trying to like shuttle diplomacy and figure things out. There was another maneuver from the State Department who was in Eretz Israel at the time, who was Kevi Yachol, trying to pull strings and be involved. But they didn't know that at the time there was a rescue operation that was launched, and that tragically the rescue operation, the preempt that was a failure. And both Nachshon Waxman and the commander of the operation, Nir Poraz, Hashem Yikom Damam, were both killed. It was a botched operation. It was a total fashla. I'm not a military person. I don't presume to judge and to know, but yet davar yadua, that it was a failure, that there was just, they didn't have the right information and they made the wrong call. The prime minister at the time, Yitzchak Rabin Alav Shalom, came to their home to ask mechila. And every Motzei Shabbos, until Rabin was assassinated, he called the Waxmans to speak to them, to wish them a good vach and ask mechila. The Achdus, the Kiddush Hashem of that experience, of knowing that there were 100,000 Jews at the Kotel davening. I remember in Frisch, every single kid, even the guys who would like put on, at those days was different, it was 25 years ago, it was a different world, it was different. Even the chever didn't come to shul, even the chever like would, you know, just put on the shel rosh just to look like they're, like to get the davening manor off their back. There was every single person in that room davening and singing, hearts broken wide open. And the Atzilus HaNefesh of Nachshon Waxman's father, Yehuda Waxman, the Levaya, you could see the footage, if you listen to the audio, while burying his young son, Nachshon, in the middle of the Levaya, Tzidok HaDin, his concern was that there would be people around the world, Jews around the world, who davened and lit Shabbos candles and gave tzedakah and took Tehillim and took on Kabbalos and made all sorts of things and davened and davened and davened. And he was worried that people's emunah would be shtered. Because Tfilas Rabin, Chazal say, you want to get our Tfilas answered? Tfilas Rabin. Eis Tzara. Everybody stepped up. I didn't put on tefillin. I didn't miss tefillin in those days. I didn't miss a mincha. It was maybe the first time I went to Marav with my father. The only time from my childhood that I can remember going to Marav with my dad during the week. And in between mincha Marav and extra learning and extra, and my mother with the Shabbos candles, like Hadassah women. Hadassah, they were doing extra Shabbos candles. And Yehuda Waxman's worried during the Levaya, what's going to happen to the emunah of those Jews who daven so hard? And he said, he wants everyone to know, Hashem heard our tefillos. Our tefillos did not go unanswered. Hashem heard our bakashos, and Hashem heard our tefillos. And Hashem answered, and the answer is no. Hard to ask questions sometimes. It's even harder sometimes to get answers. Sometimes you don't want answers. And there's an interview, the only interview that I know, to have with the Waxmans together. A reporter asked them, eye to eye, do you have questions? Like, do you question God? Do you have questions? Maybe she was implying, do you question the government, the army, the fashla, do you have questions? And Esther and Yehuda Waxman looked at each other, and they looked at the reporter and didn't say a thing. Yehuda Waxman was nifter last month. At one point in the Chassam Sofer's life, his son, his adult son, who himself was a Talmud Chacham, was going through. He was struggling. And he came to talk to his father. He wanted to speak to his father, the Gadol Hador, and speak to him, speak out his concerns and emunah and his questions. Chassam Sofer heard him out and asked for chizuk. He wanted to tell me something. He looked toward his father for some clarity. Chassam Sofer just looked at him and nodded his head. Did one of these. And his son pleaded with him. As if his emunah and his Jewish practice hung in the balance. Chassam Sofer didn't answer him. He didn't even say a word to his son. He just shook his head. I'm sorry. Son was frustrated. He was annoyed. He felt pushed away. And the day went by and he stood in it. And another day went by and another day went by. Until his father approached him and asked if he could speak with him for a few minutes, and sat down with him and discussed the idea and the questions and the sugya that was bothering him, that was sitting on his heart so in such a painful way, went through with it point by point and explained things in a clear way that was very comforting to his son. His son asked him, have you been thinking about it for 3 days? Chassam Sofer said, no, I could have answered you right then and there. But I wanted to teach you that a Jew has to learn how to live with questions. That to be Yid means to live with questions. And you have to go weiter, you have to continue, even if you have your questions. To have a kasha means to be a mevakish emuna. Kasha is osios, are the letters of Shema Hashem Kol Yekra. Question means, Hashem, hear my voice, I'm calling out to you. A rebellion is not repudiation. There was a great Yid named Reb Shmuel Halperin that when I went the first time to Poland, my Shana Aleph, with Reb Yamer and with Chanuch Teller, Rabbi Teller. So there was a Jew that came along with the trip named Shmuel Halperin, Zecher Tzadik Levracha, Siddush Yid, Haimish Yid from Yishalayim, very special person. We were in Plashev, work camp in Plashev, and he said he saw with his own eyes the Rasha of Marusha, Amnon Goth of Yimach Shemo V'Zichro of Plashev, single out the Jikav Rebbe and take the Jikav Rebbe and smash his head with his own hands on a stone. He saw with his own eyes the Kiddush Hashem, the death al Kiddush Hashem of the Jikir Rebbe. He said, I've been asking every single day since that moment, I've been asking the Ribbono Shel Olam, why? Gemara Menachos describes the conversation between Moshe Rabbeinu. HaKadosh Baruch Hu was busy fixing Ksarim, Osios, Sitre Torah in the upper worlds. And Moshe Rabbeinu is reflecting on the godless of tzaddikim and points out that really Rabbi Akiva ought to have been the one to receive the Torah to deliver it at Mount Sinai. So the godless of Rabbi Akiva, he was looking down into the world and saw Rabbi Akiva in his heyday. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu peels back a little bit of the picture and shows Moshe Rabbeinu what's going to be with Rabbi Akiva. And Moshe Rabbeinu sees, the Gemara tells us, it's not like Sipurei Safta, the Gemara tells us. And Moshe Rabbeinu from the next world sees that Rabbi Akiva's flesh is being sold in a Roman butcher shop after having his flesh combed off his body. And Moshe Rabbeinu turns to Ribbono Shel Olam and says, Zu Torah v'zu Schora? This is Torah and this is its reward? Rabbi Akiva, who's greater than me, who should have been the one at Har Sinai, this is what he gets? This is his reward? HaKadosh Baruch Hu's response to Moshe Rabbeinu is shtok. Quiet. Kach alav machshava lefanai. You don't know what I know. You don't know my ways. Shah. Shtok. So Shmuel Halperin said, every single day of my life since that moment in Jikov, since that moment in Plashev when I saw the Jikov or Goel Kiddush Hashem, I've been asking the Ribbono Shel Olam, Zuk Torah v'zuk Schora. This is Torah, this is Kedusha, this is what it means to Ver Tzadik and his reward. He said, I'll tell you, I haven't gotten any better answers than Moshe Rabbeinu did. We have many kashas. There's 6 million kashas. Ori Ansbacher is a kasha for me. Rina Schnurb is a kasha. Rabazil Shevach is a kasha. His 6 children, Chavat Gilad, are kashas, the questions. Rav Mickey Mark, it's a kasha. His whole family is a kasha, it's a big question. There's sugyos also, there's big sugyos. The Fogels are a sugya, the Chatuos are a sugya. The Etlinger family is a sugya, the Chatuos are a sugya. Neve de Kalim is a kasha, Badolach is a kasha, Netzachazani is a kasha, Netzarim is a kasha, Shirat Hayam is a kasha, Ganital is a kasha, Kfar Darom is a kasha. These are all questions. These are all very big questions on Hashem. These are all Eicha, 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 Eicha. Go to Treblinka, walk around the outside, the big field in Treblinka, and you trip over any of those big stones, point to the name of a city or town or shtetl that was destroyed, decimated, liquidated. That's a sugya. And within that sugya, there are many, many specific kashas. Amona is a kasha. If you don't know the names of these places or these people, that's a bigger kasha. But these questions express emuna. These questions express some form of rebellion, but not a repudiation. Panav Zharav lost his family, lost his world. Survived with 1 son, Avram. 1,000 children in the Talmud Torah in Panovich. 1,000 Jewish children learning Torah in the Cheder in Panovich. Were wiped out in the war. And Panovich Rav came to Eretz Israel. And he did it. He had resilience. They called him, they thought he was nuts. They thought he was a lunatic. They thought he was losing his mind. They called him Joseph the Dreamer. Yosef, the Baal Chalomos. And he said, I might be dreaming, but I'm wide awake. And he teamed up with the Gadol Hador, the Chazon Ish. They called him the Chazon Ish and the Ish Chazon, the man of vision. And together they had singular focus to rebuild Torah in the world. And in Panovich, I mean, think of who was there. It was straight from the ovens they came. There weren't Bachrim in the world. It wasn't like a thing. He said, I'm building yeshiva. They said, for who? Who are you building yeshiva for? And the survivors came, and the Jews from all over Eretz Israel came, whoever was there. And it was a traumatic time in Jewish history. In those early days of the state, still a traumatic time in Jewish history. When's it not? But it was a really traumatic time. We're talking about this morning. No one talked about the Shoah, no one talked about the Holocaust until the Eichmann trial. They didn't talk about it. Survivors didn't talk about it. It was shameful. It was held inside. Now everybody's talking about everything. Now, Allah, the Brene Brown, Ameni, talk about everything. Vulnerability, openness, resilience, grit, talk. It's kavodik to be a person who's suffering with something and share it. It is, and it's heroic. It shows great courage. It was not a thing in the early 50s. For survivors to talk about it. They were embarrassed. I met a Yid who told me once, Yushalmi told me, he had numbers on his arm. He said that he used to hide it. He used to go like this when he went to the mikveh, to hide it. Didn't want people to see. Somehow, the survivor's guilt, the irrational pain of the suffering and the trauma of what it was, I made it, he didn't, whatever it is. Weakness, the narrative of lambs to the slaughter, I don't know, not for me, I don't know. But it was a traumatized society. And it wasn't spoken about. And in Panovich, the mazkir of the yeshiva, the Rosh Yeshiva's right hand, Panovich Rav's right hand man, was a Yid named Reb Moshe Portman. And Reb Moshe Portman had lost his family in the war. It was. If you came from Europe in those days, the survivor, refugee, had suffered loss. And those were the ones who were the builders. That's who surrounded the Ponte Vizhirav. So this Rav Moshe Portman was a very dignified, very classy, very strong person. He was the right-hand man of the Ponte Vizhirav and running the yeshiva. And he was always at his side. There was one year that, what happened was that on Simchas Torah, they would have a big kiddush in yeshiva, you know, during Hakafos, everybody would have their liyav, kiddush, whatever it was. And actually, Gedolei Yisrael would come, the Brisker Rav came to Bnei Brak to be in Ponovich for Simchas Torah with the Chazon Ish. It was like, it wasn't now like we have the luxury of everybody being in their own place. Everyone came together. The Jews should be together. And by the Kiddush, this Rav Moshe Portman would have a few drinks, and he'd start to cry. He'd start to open up a little bit about his wife and his children who were killed. And he'd be open, and the dancing and the openness of holding the Sefer Torah and dancing and drinking a little bit would open him up, open his broken heart up, and he would say things. And he'd shout things out while during the dancing, and he'd walk around a little bit by the Aron and say things. And it was Yadua, this is what it was, and this happened every year, Simchas Torah. One year, described that Ponte Vizhirav came back to his apartment, and he found Rav Moshe Portman there, sitting, weeping, crying beyond, like hysterically, sobbing. And Ponte Vizhirav said, "Rav Moshe, what's the matter? What happened?" And he jumped up and he grabbed the Ponte Vizhirav, and he said, "Tell me. Look into my eyes and tell me I'm a mammon. Tell me I'm not an apikoros. Tell me I'm not an apikoros." He said, "What happened? What happened? What's the matter? What's wrong? What happened?" "Well, take it easy, Moshe. Calm down. What happened?" Apparently what happened was, during the dancing, during the kiddush, he had a couple drinks. And he opened up in a real way. And he said what was on his heart. It came out. Nichnas yayin. Yatza Sod. And he had what to say to the Ribbono Shel Olam. And he had what to talk about his wife, and how come his son isn't a bachar in the yeshiva now, Hashem took him away, v'chulei, 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 v'chulei. And there was someone there, all the rabbis, everybody came for Simchas Torah. And there was a yid there named Rabbi Yirmiyahu Fried Zatzal, who was a dayan, Eretz Yisrael de Talmud Chacham, who told this of Moshe, "Shtok, close your mouth. Kfir, you can't say apikorsis like this. Shah." And he pushed him out of the base medrash. He pushed him out. He said, "You can't talk like this. You can't have talk like this against Ribbono Shel Olam." So this Moshe Portman was so broken, he ran to the helm, he left, and he went to the apartment of the Ponte Vizhirav, and he cried and cried and cried until the Ponte Vizhirav came home. Ponte Vizhirav came home after davening. So the Rav said, "Come, let's go. Let's go to the base medrash." And he took him by the arm, and they walked through Bnei Brak back to the yeshiva, where they found this dying Rabbi Yirmiyahu. And he said, let's talk about this. And Rabbi Yirmiyahu, and he asked Rabbi Moshe, "What did you say?" And Moshe told him what he said, and he was crying about his questions on Hashem, and his tainas. And then this Rabbi Yirmiyahu said his piece about what it means to have emunah, what it means to be omid bin Yisayon, what it means to be tzidik adin, and what it means to stand strong in the face of these sfeikos. The Ponte Vizhirav, who lost his wife and children and yeshiva and community, who was the rebuilder of Torah in Eretz HaKodesh, closed his eyes and said to Rav Moshe Portman, "You're right." And then he turned to Rav Yirmiyahu and he said, "And you're right too." He said to Rav Yirmiyahu Fried, "You're right. You're right that it's apikorsis. But you weren't there. Rav Moshe, you're right. It's emuna because you were there. If we're there, if we're in it, if we're feeling it, if we're connecting what took place in the Warsaw Ghetto, if we're there, and you walk down Rehov Yafo and you're there, and you know that there was a pizza store, Sabaro, here, and you know that there was an 18 bus there, and there was another 18 bus there, and you walk to the old city and you know what happened there and there. If you're there, you could ask, you could say, it's not apikoros, it's zemuna. If you weren't there, if you're not there, don't ask. It's too close to kfira. Go listen to an inspirational talk, learn hashkafa, nunu, move on, whatever. Lo kashur. Lo kashur. You weren't there. But if you're there, you could ask. If you're there, you could speak to Hashem. You could say openly to Hashem. There's an old Yerushalmi saying that Rav Mata Frank, should be well, said when he was here in camp last summer. He said that the old Yerushalmi Breslovers used to say, it was an Arabic word, said that any Hizbodus that doesn't include some form of the word, come on, Hashem. Like, come on, Ribono Shalom, come on. That's not called Hizbodus. It's Mincha, Shacharit, and that's a Musaf on Shabbos, that's Hallel, that's nice, beautiful davening, it's good, it's davening. But if it doesn't include something like looking and saying, like, come on, that's not called Hizbodus. That's not called Beino Lebein Kono. That's not called taking off all the layers and sanding down whatever's on there and having real contact, real raw contact. If you're there, you can ask the question. If we're there, what am I going to eat in the seventh year? You want me to leave a person who doesn't have a field, person who works in business and high tech, you don't have to leave your fields fallow. Beseder gamor, Shemitah's not a big nisayon. Write a check to the Otzer HaShemitah, write it, or whatever, or like a picture of the guy who is Shvius wine on Instagram, and move on. But for the farmer, mano chalak, what are we going to eat? It's real. He's living through it. It's not just a news item. It's not just a news item that is scrolling through, waiting to get to the... how long do I have to wait to be mafsik between the terror attack and going to check the basketball scores? Like, what's considered appropriate that I'm not subhuman? That I'm not a total jerk? How long is the pause? But if we're there, then that question is a bakasha semuna. Ohad Klausner, Hashem Yikom Domo, from Beit Choron, right outside Yerushalayim. He was always a mitzdayen. They say he was just this wonderful person. He's busy in Madrich and Bnei Akiva. He was killed in Binchabil on that day in 2006 that everybody knows. Maybe not every year. You were probably 4 years old. But during that Lebanon war, there was that cursed house, cursed olive field. It was this week in 2006. Amichai Merchavi Hashem Yikom Damo, Roby Klein Hashem Yikom Damo, Dahan, Schwartzman, Cohen. There was 8 Jews who were killed in that battle, in that day, in that one day. Roby Klein. Anyways, his mother, Orit, he was in the news again last year, this Ohad Klausner, because all these years later, 13 years later, it takes time for trauma, it takes time to unpack. 13 years later, he was awarded a medal, a certificate for heroism. Because it was mitbarer, what stories that came out was that they came under fire, 8 of them or 10 of them, they were outnumbered 5-1, they came under fire. And even while he was under fire, he was saving his own people. until he was shot in the chest and by a sniper. And but posthumously they awarded him this this heroism. It's just that the whole story. We didn't know the whole story. It took 13 years later for his parents to find out what really happened that day. The soldiers kind of parts of the story came out. It was his mother, Orit, wrote was published in the Israeli press for the Shloshim. Wrote something called Mikhtav LeElokim, a letter to Hashem. She wrote a letter to God, an open letter to God. You know, like a letter to the editor. She wrote a letter to the Ribono Shel Olam called Mikhtav LeElokim. Elohim, Omrim Shata Kol Yachol. They say that you could do it all. Bertzuncha Titein, Bertzuncha Tikach. When you want, you give. When you want, you take away. Ani koeset, I'm very angry with you. Maod koeset, ech sidarta et inyanim, how you arranged all this. Yesh li sheilot rabot, I have a lot of questions. Hasheilot rabot v'kamuvan lo yeli tshuvot. Many questions, and I know I'm not going to get answers. Achani rotzel adat, I just want to know one thing. Ma'od rotzel adat, I really want to know. Lama. Eicha. Nachman writes in Reish Mem Zayin that all of these lamas, eichas, all of these unresolved questions that we have in our lives, they're called kushyot. And in the Gemara, when there's an unresolved sugya, when there's a question in the Gemara, there's a conversation or a discussion between two sages or two opinions, two schools of thought, and it comes to an impasse and there's no resolution. And upon further review, there's no resolution. So we have a halachic category where we say, Yehemuna achad sheyavo Eliyahu Navi. Let's leave it. Let's leave it aside till Eliyahu Navi comes. In other words, it's a not knowing. It's a surrender to the unknown. It's a recognition that we're in the Arafel, and that's where Elohim is. That's where the God and His. We don't know. We don't know how to answer this question right now. And in the Gemara language, that's called Teku. Tishbi Yitaretz Kushiot Uba'ayot. Tishbi will come and he will answer the questions and the problems. A question, a sugya, an issue, a kasha, a question in faith, or something in our lives that we're yearning to know. Who's the right one? Is she the right one? Is this the right place for me? Is this really my calling? Should I be here? When we have those questions that gnaw at us, that we just don't have an answer for, that's question a state of teku, of unknown, of uncertain. The resolution comes when consciousness, where the information comes from on high, is revealed in this world, and I have clarity. That's called bina. That's called knowing what to do in the situation. And in the world of Jewish thought, that's represented by the letter nun. We have the 49 gates of purity and impurity, and then we have the 50th gate, which is called the realm of bina. Of getting it, of knowing what to do. 50th gate of wisdom, of perception, consciousness. That teku is yearning for that full expression of the 50th gate of consciousness, of perception, called bina, as represented in nun, the number 50. So that the teku ends with a nun and becomes a tikkun, a fixing. When something is fixed, it becomes whole, it becomes resolved. That's called tikkun. It's fixed. Resolved, check. When the nun, which represents the 50th gate of perception, is revealed at the end of the story, and it has a good ending, and it's clear that's called tikkun. It turns the teku into a tikkun. But when that nun, which represents perception and clarity, is not in its full expression, it's not as a nun sofit, pshuta, in its full form, and we're in the middle of the uncertainty, in the middle of the teku, in the middle of the confusion, in the middle of the arafel, mid-question, that nun is kfufa, it's hunched over, it's degraded. The nun that comes in the middle is bent over, it's hunched over. Same gematria, same numerical value of 50. A nun is a nun, but it's not its full self. Then Rabbi Nachman says the letters of teku with a nun in the middle are called kinot, kinis, because the nun is in the middle. An unresolved question, a bakasha of emuna, a struggle to get clarity, to understand, without knowing where to go, what to do, and how, and why, and what, and in the middle of come on, is called kinos. That's where we are right now. That's galus. That is the state of the Jewish people in exile. We want to know, and we don't know. We're in a state of teku, of unanswered questions. Beyond, unresolved brokenness. Tishbi, Yitaretz, Kushios, Ubayos, Yehemunah, Chad Shiyavo, Eliyahu Navi, when Mashiach Zidkenu was revealed, Mala Aretz, Deyas Hashem, we'll have clarity again. And the kinos will turn into tikkun. Until then, Yehemunah, not knowing is where we meet the Ribbono Shel Olam. The state of uncertainty, of not knowing, of arafel, is where we find God. Kisham Elokim, it's a pasuk. Ko amar Hashem, zacharti lo chesed neurayich. One of those psukim of comfort. Hashem, remember the kindness of those days. Chesed neurayich. Ahavas klulusayich, the love of our youth. Lechtech acharai b'midbar b'eretz lo zeruah. How we walked with Hashem in the midbar, in a place that wasn't sown. We had such beautiful faith in Hashem. We walked together like young lovers. So my Rebbe asked, what's the big deal? What's the godless in that? What was the other choice? I mean, Paro was perpetrating a Holocaust, was throwing Jewish children into the Nile. What was the option? Hashem showed great miracles. Yad Chazak, Yad Zroon Atuya. Open, Yad Hashem. There was terrible suffering in Mitzrayim, and Hashem took us out. B'nei B'chor Rabbi Yisrael, we said it this morning. Goy Mekar of Goy. Clouds of glory, well of Miriam, Amad Aish, man every single day. What was the big chesed that Klal Yisrael did? What was the great accomplishment we had? Where was our big emuna? Imagine a road trip when a family takes. You get in the car, sitting there and head out on the trip. You say, where are we going? Don't know. Well, how long till we get there? Don't know. What are we doing when we get there? Don't know. What are we, like, can we stop for snacks? Don't know. For 40 years in the Midbar, Klal Yisrael went with Hashem, Al Pi Hashem Yachanu, Al Pi Hashem Yisau. No roadmap. We're going to Eretz HaKodesh, we're going to Eretz Yisrael. Where is that? What does that look like? What happens there? What's the deal? Where is Eretz Yisrael? Is it this way? Is it that way? There's no maps. There's no ways. Are we staying here tonight? Not sure. Okay, we got to Rafidim. What happens here? Do we know how long we're staying? Nope. Are we staying here? Yep. Maybe. Let's see. If the Amar HaEsh comes out at night and the Amar Anan doesn't go, then I guess we're staying here. There's an incredible nonstop state of having no idea. Of not knowing. Perpetual not knowing. Every single detail and facet of their lives, of like where we're, like what's coming next, how does the story continue, how does it end? We had no idea. But the road to Eretz Yisrael, the road to getting to the Promised Land, was paved with unanswered questions. That's the Kedusha of Eretz Yisrael. Lech lecha me'artzecha al eretz v'lo'artecha beis avicha. Where? Al eretz sha'arecha. There. Where? Which way? Are we there yet? Is this Eretz Yisrael? No, not yet. Where is it? Al eretz sha'arecha. Where is the Beis HaMikdash? Where is the, what are the coordinates for the Beis HaMikdash? Oh, it's a makam asher yivchar Hashem. I'm going to, don't worry. I'll show you. Where? The entire experience of Dveikus Bashem, of a Yichud, can only unfold in the where, when, why, in the questions. Menachem Froman said that this is the derech of learning in Chutz La'aretz is very much focused Talmud Bavli's questions and resolutions, answers. But in Yerushalmi, which is Torah's Eretz Yisrael, which is the Torah of Mashiach, the whole thing of learning, the avod of the limud there, is to ask questions and not necessarily to answer them, just to ask the questions. Because the Kedusha of Eretz Yisrael is infinite, it doesn't end. The relationship, the yichud between Hashem and a Yid, in the context of not knowing, it doesn't end. Because answers end the conversation. But answering a question with a question, with a question, with a question, and learning it together, and asking it together, only makes it deeper. Yehi Munach. Three times a day, we're promised a lot of very good schar and Gemara Brachos by saying Ashrei three times a day. Shomer Adonai Eskol Ha'ovav. Eskol Ha'Rashayim Yashmin. It's very clear. Shem is going to protect and love those who love Him. All the bad people, all the Rashayim, Yashmid, wiped out. Hashem protects those who love Him. The wicked will be destroyed. Psukim. A Yid comes into shul, a Pashut guy, an unlearned Jew, comes into shul, walks in a little late, while the Chazan's davening Ashrei out loud, singing Ashrei out loud. This Maisa is the source of why we have to sing Ashrei out loud in camp. He comes into davening to shul, and this Pashut guy hears the Chazan saying out loud, Shomer Hashem Eskol Avav Eskol HaRashayim. He didn't understand. Why would Hashem watch over all of those who He loves? And Kol HaRashayim, like, he turned around, he doesn't understand. Next day he comes to the shul, and the Chazan's again up to Ashrei. And he walks in, the Chazan's out loud saying, Eskol Avav, Veskol HaRashayim Yashmid. All of those who love Him, and all of the Rishayim He'll wipe out. He doesn't get it. Is Hashem going to wipe out the ones He loves? Is Hashem going to protect the ones He loves and the Rishayim? He goes to the rabbi. And he said, I don't understand. Yesterday, he said that Hashem is going to protect the ones He loves and the Rishayim. And now today it's Eskol Ahavav, Eskol Rishayim Yashmid. He's going to wipe them all out. I'm confused. I don't understand. The rabbi said, yeah, of course you're confused. You don't understand. You came in the middle. You walked in the middle. You left in the middle and you came in the middle. You don't have the full picture. Of course it doesn't make any sense to you. Everything in the middle looks broken. Everything in the middle is under construction or deconstruction. And here we are. Jokers to the left, clowns to the right, stuck in the middle of the Ribbono Shel Olam. Hashem, it's like we're asking, Eicha, 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 Eicha. How could it be? How could it get it? And Hashem is saying to us, Ayeka. Like Hashem said to Adam Rishon, Ayeka. What do you mean? You're asking me Eicha? I'm asking you Ayeka. We're both looking at each other saying, come on. Ayeka, just get it together. I told you how this works. Just get it together. Avos Yisrael, just get it together. Be Erlich Yidin and we'll fix this whole thing. And we're saying to Ribbono Shalom, come on. Lama, Eicha. We're both looking at each other saying, seriously? Everybody wants the end of the story. Everybody wants the end to be sweet, for it to be good. Haba ani rotze liyot batuach b'chol libi, with all of my heart. Shalamasa hazeh yesof tov, that it should be a good ending. We want chiyas hameisim, kibbutz galios. What are we supposed to do? What can we do? Dalet Shvat. Anybody know what the significance of Dalet Shvat is on the calendar? Besides for Teferet. Thank you so much. Yeah. Thank you for being here, Azriel. I want to thank Rabbi Azriel for being here. Bechlal and Befrat. For knowing that Dalet Shvat is the Hilul of the Baba Sali. That's where the Jewish people are. And Dalet Shvat, that's where the Jewish people are. That's where the Jewish people are. In the Tivot, the Baba Sali. That's where the party is. In 1984, at the Levaya, the Baba Sali, Rabbi Yisrael Abuchatzera, Zeche Tzadik B'Kodesh L'Vracha, on the way to the Levaya, in one moment, there was a terrible tragedy, a car accident. Four Avreichim in a car were killed. And in a moment like that, 30 orphans. 30 orphans. 30 children became orphans in one shot. People, it was just like, can't imagine. So there was a Yid who was very stirred up by this, was very disturbed by this, was really, couldn't understand. They're on the way to the Baba Sali's Levaya. And they went to the Rachmas Trifke Rebbe in Yerushalayim and asked the Rachmas Trifke Rebbe, what are we supposed to do? Like, what could be done? What can we do? You feel helpless in such a situation. What can we do? What do you do? I remember this feeling by Rav Vosner's Levaya. Two Jews were trampled to death at Rav Vosner's Levaya. What do you want? Like, what are you supposed to do? How do you even, like, what do you do with that? You turn the page and move on to the next story in the newspaper, or just, like, try to block it out or not be mityaches to it. But if you're there and you're connected and thinking about it, it's like, what are you? So they went to the Rachmas Trifke Rebbe and said, what can we do? What could be done? And the Rachmas Trifke Rebbe looked at them and said, everything, anything. You could do everything. Everything could be done. Anything could be done. For a Yid, anything could be done. We could do everything. We can go weiter. We could say Mishnayos. We could learn Mishnayos. We could daven. We could wash before bread. We could bench after we eat. We could say Asher Yatzar. We can give tzedakah. We could wear tefillin. We could add light. We could mourn. We could be angry at Hashem. We could have questions. What choice do we have? 20 years ago, Esther Waxman wrote this essay. She called it, his name was Nachshon. After the Shiva, we all returned to our routines. Our son, who had just gotten out of the army, attended Hebrew University. Another went back to the army. Two others rejoined their yeshiva. And the two youngest twins, who had turned 8 on the day of the funeral, went back to school. For that is what the Jewish people have always done. Rebuilt after destruction, began new lives from the ashes and blood of the old. I had new respect for my parents, who had lost everything and relocated to a strange land and built a new family, a new life. I was in my own country, my own homeland. My son died wearing his country's uniform. And God willing, my other sons will serve their country proudly as well. Betoch ami ani yoshevet, she writes. Among my people I dwell. And that for me is a privilege and a blessing. My love of my people, my land, my Torah has never wavered. Hashem should hear our questions. And we should hear His. Hashem shouldn't give up on us. Keep asking us where we are, Ayeka. Until He finds us and we find ourselves, we'll keep asking Him. Eicha, may we be zocha to live gracefully with our questions. Ad bias goel, until Eliyahu Navi comes, Mashiach Zakenu is revealed. Tishbi Itaretz Kushios Ubayos, and until then, we'll keep asking.